Hello, everybody. Welcome or welcome back to B&B Anime. I'm Blue. That is Brad.
Hi, I'm Brad.
I realized I always say that, but because these podcast episodes are audio only, when I say that and then there's just no response and I keep talking, I'm like, nobody knows who that is.
Hello, everyone. I am that. Welcome to B&B Anime with my co-host, Blue. I am that. We are now B&T Anime.
Wait, we never decided which B was which B. So we could be T and B.
Yeah, well, I think we've come to the conclusion that it's Brad and Blue because it rolls off the tongue better. Mm-hmm. Although I have no want to be the first in it because you're obviously the most important B. Ugh. Of this podcast?
No, the most important B is Bean.
True. B&B Anime.
B&B.
I mean, at this point, Tilly is just such a huge part of our marketing as it is. Anyway, it might as well be B&B Anime.
Yeah, speaking of which, this is going to be posted long after, but our Instagram story today, day of recording, is Bean. So if you're not following the Instagram, you're missing out on Bean stories. Just saying.
Literally made my day. All right. I have had a shitty week. Made my day getting to see Bean.
Being a wriggle monster and murdering her pig toy.
I mean, at this point, it's a very long standard tradition of Bean just destroying her toys.
Some random toys survive. She's picky, but some of them survive. Because we have, what do we have right now? I think that one died. We have a ghost, like a rubber ghost, that's probably about 5 years old, about as old as Bean. Because, yeah, we got it around Halloween time, so it must have been her first year that we had her. So, yeah, it's probably about 5 years old. And it survived. I don't know how it survived, but it survived. And they still play with it all the time. I think that's our current oldest toy. No, there is a yellow ring thing, like a fabric ring that predates Tilly. That was Cedar's. Back when she was around, we had her. And she found that on a walk. I guess somebody threw it and couldn't find it in the shrubbery and she ran into the shrubs and found it and then brought it back out again and carried it home. So she got to keep it. Because that's the rule. If they find a ball or a toy and it's nobody else's, like it's clearly not anybody's, then if they carry it all the way home, they get to keep it.
Finders keepers.
Yeah. Because they've lost their fair share of balls. So, you know,
yep.
What goes around comes around.
Pretty much, yeah.
Yeah. But Freddie Winifred, our other golden, she had a bath today. So... Yeah, we took her to the dog wash. She's actually really good at getting baths. She doesn't hate them. Tilly's not keen, but Tilly is like a proper golden. She's got that like oily, thick, fluffy fur. So she doesn't mind. She loves to swim, but she doesn't like to get her like under fur, her downy fur wet. Obviously, she gets cold. It's insulation.
Yeah.
So she hates baths, loves swimming, hates baths. Winnie loves swimming and loves baths, loves water. So she's good. But she doesn't have that like same downy fur. So she she's had like fur issues since we rescued her. So she's like, that's one of the things we went to the vet for. They actually went to a vet specialist for her fur and skin because they're like, what's going on with this? And so she's on some medication for it and she has to eat fish. That's what the vet said. You have to feed her lots of fish, so she's a fish dog. Yeah, so she had a bath today, but she was really, really smelly, but it's been just too cold to wash them because we've been fluctuating recently between like 0 degrees and minus 20, like day per day. And obviously you can't get them super wet and they don't like hair dryers. Neither of them like hair dryers, so they have to air dry. And it's just too cold to wash them. But today it was like nice and sunny and warm in the
Isn't
house.
It like four or five for you today?
Yeah, really like nice today.
Somewhere along those
lines? It's been slushing outside. Like everything's melting. It's been really, really nice today. And like next week it's supposed to get even warmer. Yeah, I have a high of 7.
Look at you, finally getting to normal temps.
Yeah, right? But like we only have – it's going to – the thing that sucks about this time of year is that it freezes overnight. So it's super slushy during the day and then it'll freeze overnight. And then for the first half of the next day, it's slick.
Yeah.
So this is where you get like accidents happening all the time because like there's black ice on the road. And there's no point sending out the salt trucks because it's going to be melted in an hour anyway. So by the time they get the salt trucks all loaded up, then it's already melted, you know? So like there's no real point to doing that. But it just means that you end up seeing a fair amount of cars in the ditches like in spring. Because yeah. Idiots be speeding on roads they can't see.
Yeah. People are dumb.
They are dumb.
So speaking of things that are dumb, and also while we were on the subject of dog toys and dogs, so part of your whole care package I sent out, I did differently this time because I was going to ensure that it fucking made it to you.
Okay.
Although there was part of it that I could not figure out how to properly do because I was going through, I did everything online through the Postal Service. Mm-hmm. So I filled out like the customs form, literally did everything online so that way it wouldn't have to deal with my shitty handwriting.
Mm-hmm.
Because you actually have a letter included in this one. I didn't leave it out this time like a dumbass. So the only person who has to deal with my shitty handwriting is you. But everything else was like nicely printed and filled out. So it was, there is literally no excuse for this not to make it to you. I even paid for tracking.
Yeah, I saw the tracking number.
Yeah, to where if it doesn't fucking make it, I'll know where it went wrong.
You got yours though. So that means that you have the stickers.
Yep. And one of them is on my truck. So we will see how it holds up to direct sunlight all the time.
Yeah.
But no, I do love the stickers. They are a nice material. Seeing the book sticker in person, seeing how it turned out, it's very nice.
Yeah. So, yeah, I think they turned out really well. So I will be putting the ramen bowls up immediately. And then I will be placing an order for Tilly puppy stickers. And I think just our regular Tilly, I think, is what we decided as well. Was it? Was it Tilly?
I think so.
And regular Tilly? Yeah. So those three will be up on the Etsy first. So if you want to grab those, head on over to our Etsy, which is just B&B Anime on Etsy. So you can grab those. But the ramen bowl will be up first before the other two because obviously I have to wait for them to be delivered to me. So if you're interested in supporting the podcast directly, that's the best way to do it. And yeah, other than that, like, make sure you follow us and drop likes and subscribes and all of that shit. And because, yeah, we love doing this. And it takes up a lot of time. So it would be nice if we could continue to do this. And we've just had our fourth birthday. So,
yeah. Happy fourth birthday to us. Hooray. Yeah. I have a button for this. Hang on.
Yay. but, yeah, so... it would be sick to be able to keep doing this. And one way you can directly show our support to let us know that you enjoy what we're doing is, following us on all of our socials, liking shit, and heading on over to the Etsy to just check them out and see if there's something that you want.
Yeah.
They're eco vinyl stickers. So according to the website, they are safe for outdoors and dishwasher and all that shit. But Brad's going to put them through the ringer to see if they truly are. But I have tested them indoors, and I love them indoors.
And then speaking of upcoming things, so the next episode that releases after this one on the podcast feed for the YouTube feed, that episode is going to be out way before this ever makes it live.
Yeah.
Because if I look at things correctly, this episode will be going live on YouTube May 12th. but if you're listening to this on the podcast feed, the week following is going to be the first episode of season 2 of Anime Island, where I interviewed a voice actress by the name of Melissa White. And I am so excited for you all to see that episode. Melissa was absolutely fantastic to have on. All of the props to her for making that the easiest interview I could have ever hoped for. Blue can attest to this. I stressed the fuck out over this recording.
Yeah.
I was almost sick. That's how stressed I was over this. Just wanting to make sure that it went well.
Yeah.
That it was genuinely the easiest thing I've ever done. It was an hour and 16 minutes that by the time I cut out all the stuff that I needed to cut out, I literally cut out less than a minute.
Mm-hmm.
If I cut out all of the random stuff from hours, because at this point, I barely have to touch hours, but just cutting out all of the silences and everything. Normally I cut out like 5 or 6 minutes worth of shit. Less than a minute I had to cut out of that.
Yeah.
So
I mean, we do a lot of admin at random intervals during our podcasts.
that is very, very true. But again, it was just one of those things of, again, I was so worried over it, and it turned into just being a just conversation that just naturally flowed. Like I didn't know I was capable of doing that with another human being outside of you.
I knew that. You're a great interviewer.
No.
Yeah,
no,
you are.
Definitely
not. No, one of your best skills is being able to listen to what another person is saying and bounce off of it very quickly. You have really good adaptation, and you're really good at allowing people to speak and to properly articulate the point. And you also sum up rambling really well. You've had a lot of practice with me doing that, but like when another person rambles, you're very good at summing up what they're saying and articulating it in a way that's concise and just really put together. And I think that's what makes you a really good interviewer. And I'm stoked to see the rest of the Anime Island season. And yeah, hop on over to the YouTube channel to go support Brad on his ventures of spreading out and communicating with other humans.
Yeah, yay. I know. I'm not so lonely. I'm out here making friends.
He's making friends.
More even though I'm interviewing this one for another episode, because it's going to be a running bit of every season. I have to interview Blue, because I mean, I'm also showing you really good shit as we go along. Yeah. So I'm curious if your favorites are like slowly shifting kind of.
I think so.
We go along.
I do think so. I have some favorites that I just don't think are ever going to change because of sentimental reasons, or they just perfectly fit my personality. Like Tanaka-kun is probably always going to be my favorite comedy slice of life. Like, I just love it. Chihaya, even though I gave this latest one a pretty low rating, isn't because I don't like the show. It's just because I have to think about it constructively for in the podcast settings. But personally, it's one of my favorites. I absolutely love it. Yeah, like, I think a lot of, like, I still love my sports anime. I still love anything jazz related. Like, I still have my favorites. But I do think that I'm branching out into different areas. Mm-hmm. Like, Oshinoko was really good, and that wouldn't normally be something that I would watch on my own.
I know Frieren and The Apothecary Diaries had, like, a huge influence on you recently as well.
I loved that. Well, I haven't finished both of them yet because we're going to finish them soon. But yeah, been loving those. Also really loved Vinland Saga, which I was expecting from the first season, but the second season made me love it even more. And I know that's a controversial opinion, considering that most people actually didn't like the second season, but the second season made it better for me.
So on that note, we had a conversation about the anime awards from Crunchyroll for the year. And we made some predictions as to what we thought would win. And so do you want to talk about these?
Yeah, let's. I did get some spoilers because I've been posting on the Instagram, so I saw some announcements.
Yeah, I figured. So the biggest one to talk about, we'll get into all the smaller ones earlier, but this is the one that shocked me the most. So for those whom are unaware, the Anime Awards consist of the fall of the prior year to summer of the current season. So for this year, it consisted of fall of 2022 through summer of 2023.
Think of it as like a school year.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Fall did not count towards the anime, but Anime of the Year, what took Anime of the Year was Jujutsu Kaisen's second season. Well, the only thing that was in the running from JJK was the Hidden Inventory arc.
Right.
It wasn't Shibuya.
Yeah.
Shibuya had nothing to do with that. And yet it still won over our guess, which was Vinland Saga, which baffles me.
Yeah.
In my heart, I wanted nothing more than Oshinoko to win because it was the most captivating show, in my opinion, out of the entirety of 2023. But I was willing to let that go for Vinland Saga because Vinland Saga just captivated the world with that second season.
Yeah.
Nobody had anything bad to say about it except for the people that are just diehard action fans. But you can't please those with anything other than a top quality like battle shonen. But it baffles me because don't get me wrong. The Hidden Inventory and Premature Death arc was really good. For JJK, but it didn't send to me the thought of JJK winning anime of the year, in my opinion.
No, I don't think so either. I don't think that held up to the first season of JJK. And I don't necessarily think it like got worse either, but I do think that it just kind of plateaued at that point. Whereas Vinland Saga, in my opinion, the second season was better than the first season. The first season was needed to establish the world, to set everything up and to grasp you as a viewer, to give you the emotional damage, to be able to have that be worked out in the second season. But that second season was so relatable in its fantasy historical world. I say fantasy because it's not real, but in the, you know, and I don't, that couldn't have happened without the first season, but that was the part that I think everyone, at least everyone that I've spoken to, connected with. Yeah, I don't know. I don't think that there was that same level of emotional bond that I had with the second season of Vinland Saga than there was with JJK. I just don't, it wasn't deep enough. JJK was good, and it did, you know, it moved you, you watched it, you felt emotions, sure. But Vinland Saga pulled you in and took you on this harrowing journey of self-discovery and transformation of a human, of their morals, of their life, of everything they've ever known, of having to put that into perspective and decide whether or not they still feel the way that they used to feel. And I think that's something that all of us have to go through at some point in our lives. Like, we make decisions when we're younger and we say to ourselves at the time, this is what I'm always going to believe in for the rest of my life. And then you grow as a person and you reflect on that and you have to reevaluate of like, is that still how I really feel? That I feel like that's actively hurting people. That's actively hurting me. That's not who I want to be as a human. And is it this decision that I made, this core moral, this part of me that I assigned to myself all those years ago, that is hurting all of these other people, of hurting myself, of damaging my community, and having to reevaluate with that and decide who you want to be as an adult and from that point on further in your life. And I think there's a couple of times when everybody has to do that throughout their life. And I think COVID recently has been a time when a lot of people have done that simultaneously. I think we kind of all had a global mirror shoved in our faces. And and I think it came out at a really good time for everyone to have that escapism that anime gives you, but also relating that to who you are as a human. And I don't think that JJK holds up to that level of emotional connection.
No. Now, granted, JJK's second season did give us some really emotional moments that were shocking, to say the very least. And it gave me, in my opinion, the greatest fight scene in anime history.
Yeah.
That final standoff was just so incredibly well animated, so fluid. Like, everything MAPPA had was put into that, and so hands down the best fight scene that I've ever seen from somebody who used to be a huge shonen junkie growing up. But it did not register with me the same way that Vinland Saga did from a character development and in like emotional perspective. Like I said, even though in my heart, I wanted nothing more than Oshinoko to win because it checked off every box that I personally have for what I want out of an anime. Vinland Saga was by far a masterpiece in its own right. Like, it was so well done. And like I said, given everything overall, Vinland Saga should have taken it, but especially just over the hidden inventory arc, there was no reason that Vinland Saga shouldn't have taken that.
Yeah.
But again, my opinion. Best continuing anime series, One Piece, that's a given.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, not a shadow of a doubt. I don't think One Piece has ever not won that at this point.
It's
except for while Super was going, I think Dragon Ball was, I think Dragon Ball took it, which, rest in peace, Akira Toriyama. I'm still not okay.
No.
I made a whole, like, 12-minute video on YouTube just kind of, like, venting my feelings on the subject. I got Blue's permission because that's not our typical thing to upload, but I just, I had to talk about it because that man was so influential on me as a person growing up. And if it wasn't for Akira Toriyama, you and I would not be here having this conversation right now.
Yeah.
Like, it's one of those things, like, it's just like a small butterfly effect that kind of, you know, changes, you know, you change one thing and it changes the whole course. And I've, you know, I did a lot of self-reflecting over that. It's just, yeah, it's been a rough week as far as that's concerned, because that man touched the lives of millions and millions of people.
And he was young, so, too, like only in his, like, he was only 68. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, he was so young. And it's just, it still doesn't seem real.
No.
To think, because he had so many different projects going on that everybody was looking forward to, with the new Dragon Ball series, and Super was still ongoing. But I mean, just I'm not okay.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was anyway, moving on. Before I sit here and cry, we've had enough of me crying on this podcast. It's fine. Best new anime series was Chainsaw Man. I kind of figured that would be the case.
Yeah.
Because leading up to this anime season, it was the most hyped anime coming into 2023 because the manga was incredible and finally seeing it animated.
Yeah.
I mean, did I believe Oshinoko should have been snubbed again? No, but I 100% understand why Chainsaw Man got it.
Chainsaw Man had some of the best imagery of a new anime within the past few years. Like, it has such a specific, like, picturing in your brain, like when you you know, JJK, I do get a solid image. Several other animes I get a solid image, but like Chainsaw Man's image in my head is crystal clear, because their marketing was so incredibly consistent. The imagery that they used in the manga and then capturing that into anime was wonderfully interpreted, and the storyline was good enough to hold up to the expectation of the imagery. And so it just really solidified its position immediately, very effectively, right off the bat, that it almost didn't really matter how the end of the season went, because you were already, like, within a first, like, one or two episodes, it was already cemented into your brain because of how fantastic the marketing and initial imagery was, that, like, it was already there. So it helped, obviously, that the story was good and it was a very entertaining show and all of that. But, like, it set itself up in a highly saturated anime genre of the, like, demon curses realm right now, with the biggest animes that are currently being released being within that genre, and stood itself out from that. That didn't make sense. And stood out from the competition. because of the imagery. And that, I think, goes, don't knock your cup over, jeez, that goes to the original author of the manga, but it also goes to the animators who were able to translate that effectively into the animation and have it hold up. So I think they did a very, very good job with that. I think that makes sense.
Yeah, it does. And it, in my opinion, gave probably one of the most memorable scenes in recent history. Mm-hmm. Because I remember the bit in the manga of the Makima at the temple mm-hmm. scene with like the hand signs and causing people to explode. Mm-hmm. And yet seeing that animated is still so chilling. And it just, anytime I think of Chainsaw Man, like that's the main scene that comes to mind, was just like how mind blowing that was to actually see that be put into practice. Mm. So it was very, very interesting to see that. But it was, again, incredibly well adapted. I have no complaints as a manga reader before Chainsaw Man ever came out. Love it. I look forward to the next season coming, I think later this year, maybe. I hope so. I hope MAPPA employees are getting sleep. That's what I hope. Oh, best anime film was won by Suzume, mm-hmm. which fair, deserved it.
Yeah.
100%.
It was just a visually very satisfying anime.
Mm-hmm.
That's what it what I remember from it more than anything is just the scenery. Yeah.
I mean, it's Makoto Shinkai. If you want the best background visuals that an animator can do, Makoto Shinkai is it. Like, I realize we dote on Laid Back Camp for its visuals and a few other shows as well, but Makoto Shinkai is unparalleled whenever it comes to his world animation.
Yeah, he's a master of blending fantasy and real life. That's where I think he excels, is those scenes where it's an abandoned city or, you know, something has happened to a city or something like that, and it's had a magical element added to it. He's really good with lighting and adding glows to things. He's able to do a lot with mists and glitter effects, you know. That's kind of where what I think of when I think of his animation is it's pale, he's very pastel, and then where he gets the magic from is by adding these layers of these foggy, misty effects, then bright lights, very clear animation. He's very, very, very good at drawing you into the atmosphere of the anime. And I think that's what makes his anime so beautiful, is that level of atmosphere that he creates.
Yeah. And I think for me, too, his ability to create like almost photorealism type animations, like the thing that stands out to me the most whenever I think of his animation is the scenes from both Your Name and Weathering With You, where it shows the wide shot of Tokyo and it has the transitions from day to night. And it looks like you're looking at an actual time-lapse transition of Tokyo from day to night, minus just the more like pastelish colors that you don't get in real life. But just, it's so seamless, so beautiful, so incredibly well done. I have nothing bad to say about anything that man makes. It's just so good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I get Suzume. I don't really think that the storyline was top tier in my opinion, but I think that's just because I felt that it was kind of done before. Obviously that story hadn't been done before, but the themes of it I felt had been. But then you get the Makoto Shinkai elements added to it and it does give it a unique spin to it, and I get why it's a very palatable, you know, emotion grabbing kind of film. But from what I remember of having watched it, I don't remember it being particularly standout in the story specific area.
Yeah. I think it's definitely the most Ghibli-esque of all of his films with the storytelling. I understand why he made that film, because that film was so personal to him because it was based off of the earthquakes in Japan. That happened, so it was kind of his way of giving back to the community for them having gone through that. So I get it, but overall, like, it's not my favorite of his works.
No.
And I'm not even sure what I rated it at that point. Mm-hmm. It was probably like a 9.5, 10, most likely. Looking back on it after having just recently rewatched it with some friends, probably sitting at an 8 overall from story and everything else. But visually and soundtrack wise, 10.
Yeah. Yeah, I think I'm with you there. And I do, yeah, I find it hard to criticize art when it is so personal to the artist. And I think that's something that both you and I struggle with, considering the fact that we do create, you know, outside of the podcast as well, on our own. And we obviously attach a lot of emotions to it. But I don't know. I think it was fine. I just don't think that it was as impactful as other works that he's done have been.
Yeah, I can agree with that.
Yeah.
A few other things to touch on just before we move on, because these were other things that we have either covered and or watched. Best original anime was won by Buddy Daddies.
That's fun.
It was a good show.
It's a fun show. It's a good watch to just entertain yourself.
Yeah. It won over Birdie Wing and Do It Yourself, which are things that we have covered.
Yeah.
But it also won over Akiba Maid War, which is Maids with Guns. I've seen the first episode. It's batshit crazy and hilarious.
Yeah, that I can see why, because that and then Birdie Wings would have fallen into the same category of girls with big weapons doing mundane tasks. And yeah, I can see how that would, they would kind of cancel each other out. Do It Yourself, we have recently actually just uploaded onto the YouTube channel. Nudge, nudge, wink, wink.
Shameless plug.
But I think that that was, it was fine. I think we both had a pleasant time. But if you don't like slice of life anime, you're going to hate it, because it's so slow and so mundane that you, it's barely entertainment in that sense. Like, it's just kind of background anime, if that even makes sense.
It's literally a true slice of life of cute girls doing cute things.
Yeah.
So if that's not your vibe, that show is 100% not your vibe.
Yeah.
Like, K-On! Would probably be more your vibe than that.
And not even cute, like sexual cute. Cute, like 2D cartoons from, like, the early 2000s cute. Like, childhood cute. Like, it's
Tanaka-kun art style, essentially. Like, as much as we carry on about Tanaka-kun, it's literally that.
Yeah, it's just silly little comfy life, which I very much love, but you do have to be in a certain mood for it.
I agree. Best animation was won by Demon Slayer, the Swordsmith Village arc.
I get that. That's fair.
You see, here's the thing. Part of me gets that, but here's what it won over: Attack on Titan, the final season, the first film special, Chainsaw Man.
Okay.
JJK season 2, which, I mean, that, I guarantee you it doesn't take into account the fact that it was only hidden inventory. But here's the one that gets me the most: Mob Psycho season 3.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Mob Psycho is one of the most mundane yet gorgeously animated things that we've ever covered. Because normally it's similar to like a DIY-esque art style until it goes hard, and when it goes hard, it goes fucking insane.
Yeah,
like, it is a psychedelic masterclass. It
really is. Demon Slayer, we've spoken about the, we've praised the animation before, so I do get it on that front, but I don't think that these most recent seasons of Demon Slayer have elevated their animation from what they originally were. But Mob Psycho, I think, has consistently improved upon itself.
Mm-hmm. The biggest animation change I noticed for the latest season of Demon Slayer versus prior seasons was the cinematography. The animation was the same. I realize we shit on the CG a little bit, but I understand why. Because it's incredibly fucking hard to do massive monsters in a 2D art style. So I will fully forgive the CG, because they blend everything together so seamlessly well. But the cinematography has continued to impress with the animation. And from the clips that I've seen of the new season that's airing, I think, May 12th for the Swordsmith Village arc, they continue to improve upon that.
Yeah,
they continue to expand on their building blocks without changing the formula too much, which I guess keeps the show feeling consistent without going, I guess, too hard. Mm-hmm. But Mob Psycho, to me, just stands out as a better overall animation style, to me, anyway.
Yeah. I mean, I get it. I get why Demon Slayer got it, but yeah.
Yeah, I get it. I just don't personally agree. Mm-hmm. Best cinematography was won by JJK season 2.
Okay.
Which, I mean, fair. The cinematography in JJK, again, including Shibuya, was, as much as I hate to praise it, because, you know, the animators deserve a break.
Yeah.
But no, it was incredibly well done. Best art direction went to Demon Slayer, mm-hmm. which, again, fair. Mob Psycho wasn't up for that at all, so 100% deserves it. Although, Zom 100 was also in the running. Mm. And from an art direction perspective, Zom 100 was fantastic.
Zom 100 had some specific things about it, like within the art direction realm, that were unique and well thought out. I don't think that the animation itself holds up to, you know, your Mob Psycho and your Demon Slayers, but I do think that there were specific parts of it that were very clever.
Yeah, the animation definitely doesn't hold up, but I think art style and, again, art direction, it 100% belongs in the running.
Yeah.
For that.
Agreed. They did foliage stupidly well for a zombie anime.
They really did. Like yeah. The background animation and everything was very well done.
Yeah, like why were those hot springs so beautiful? Like they didn't need to be.
It really didn't need to go that hard. Best comedy went to Spy Family.
Yeah.
Which, fair. Mm-hmm. Although it won over Bocchi, so that hurts my heart.
Yeah.
Best action anime went to JJK. Again, disagree. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Just because of, you know, what it was technically supposed to cover, but I'm not going to sit here and constantly repeat myself.
Yeah.
Best fantasy went to Demon Slayer.
Okay.
Over things like, well, really the only other thing that we've covered was Mashle.
Oh, that should have won.
I agree, it should have.
Mashle should have won. Mashle's great.
Mashle is so good. I'm so excited for us to cover the second season because it's still just as bad shit crazy.
Was Mashle not up for best comedy?
Best comedy, Bocchi, Buddy Daddies, Mashle.
Okay.
Spy Family's Second Core and Zom 100.
I don't think Spy Family's Second Core should have won that.
I agree. Although for some reason I'm surprised they didn't just include the second season with that instead of just the second core. Mm-hmm. But then again, was the second core fall? I don't recall. Mm. My release dates are all swimming together at this point.
Because Spy Family's good, but it wasn't like laugh out loud funny. Mm-hmm. Whereas Bocchi and Mashle both made me laugh out loud.
Oh, yeah. 100%.
Yeah. Mashle's just consistently stupid. Whereas Spy Family has, like, actual moments of, like, aw, and, mm-hmm. you know, family bonding and action, and there's a lot more to Spy Family. I don't even know that I would necessarily classify Spy Family as a comedy in my head.
I classify it as a comedy because I don't know what else I would classify it under. It's a comedy fantasy.
It's like a,
I can't classify it as slice of life either because it's not like present setting.
It's like an action, like it's family.
I mean
comedy, but like comedy as its second category. Like I don't know where I'd put it. Yeah, it's like action comedy maybe, or a detective comedy. Like it's not, I wouldn't necessarily put it straight under comedy, but Mashle in my head is comedy before anything else.
Yeah. Which I mean, like I said, honestly, just for the category itself, yeah, Mashle. I was gonna say Bocchi is to me like pure comedy, but it's still such slice of life that I feel like it falls more on the slice of life side than the comedy side. But yeah. I definitely prefer the comedy.
It's like a slice of Bocchi. Life music comedy anime.
Yeah, it hits so many different genres and it does them all so well.
It does, yeah.
So our last two, best drama was won by Attack on Titan, the final season, the final chapter special one, which it won over Oshinoko, To Your Eternity season 2, which I completely forgot aired. So we have to cover that at some point. And Vinland Saga season 2.
Oof. I mean, I get it. I did definitely want Attack on Titan to win something because it was such a cultural phenomenon globally, that it had to win something on its final award season.
I mean, there's one more special that's going to be coming out. Well, I mean, it's already out, but it came out in October, right, so it so falls in the fall category. Season. Yeah, and I have a feeling because of what it is, unless recency bias takes over, it'll win Anime of the Year next year because it is the final special for it. But hands down, from a drama perspective, this special takes it, in my opinion. I fucking bawled over what happened in this special. It hurt my soul, which I guess we need to get caught up on Attack on Titan so we can actually talk about it, because I can't have that conversation with you and talk about why I cried, even though I'm sitting here and currently tearing up right now thinking about it.
Did it make you cry more than the first episode of Oshinoko?
Yes.
Okay.
Mainly because of what happened, but we'll get to that whenever we get to it. Although the first episode of Oshinoko hurt me a lot.
The first episode of Oshinoko needs to go to an awards season on its own.
It really should. It should have been up for best film. Let's be real. It is a feature-length film episode. It should 100% be up for best film. Fuck Suzume Oshinoko wins.
Honestly, genuinely, the first episode of Oshinoko should have taken best film.
It should have. Oh, my God.
Ugh, that's harrowing.
It is. You missed out, Anime Awards. You missed out. Oh. And Best Slice of Life was won by Bocchi the Rock, because of course it fucking did. Yeah,
absolutely. Deserved.
It won over Do It Yourself and My Love Story with Yamada at level 999.
Yeah, okay. I liked My Love Story with Yamada-kun. That was cute, but also I think it's very specific. I mean, I get that there's a gamer anime nerd crossover. Like, most anime nerds are also gamer nerds, but not all. And also, not all of them are interested in romance animes, like, specifically.
Yeah.
But I do think so it's a niche. It's a niche anime. But I thought it was very cute, and I thought it was very relatable to us nerds. So, I don't know. I think it's very cute. I definitely think it's worth a watch, but yeah, it doesn't hold up to Bocchi in Just Being a Slice of Life. And again, same thing with DIY. It's fine, but it's very specific.
Yeah, it won over some other big titles. It won over Horimiya, which we haven't seen, but I'm sure at least you're aware of, right?
Yeah.
So it won over that. It won over Insomniacs After School, which was one of the best anime to have dropped this year, but be put in Disney Plus jail.
Oh.
So it didn't get the attention that it deserved. That's sad. And then Skippin' Loafer, which I have heard incredible things about, it just wasn't on my radar of things to watch, and then therefore we didn't cover it. But outside of that, the last big one that we have to talk about, because I can't let it go, is Best Anime Song, which was won by Idol by Yoasobi from Oshinoko.
Okay.
Because my God, if this didn't win that award, I was going to kill someone.
I was going to say, if that one doesn't go your way, then somebody's losing a head.
Oh, somebody would have. Because holy shit, I was not a happy boy if that did not get it.
No.
Although, there were some other really good ones in the running. I mean, 5 out of the 6 of them were from shit that we have watched. You had Kickback from Chainsaw Man. Sesshun Complex from Bocchi the Rock. The main track from Suzume by Radwimps. And Where Our Blue Is, which was the OP for Jujutsu Kaisen's Hidden Inventory arc. All of those are incredible songs. Like, I enjoyed all of them, and all of them are on my music playlist for when I drive. Like, all of them are incredible. But Oshinoko's, or I guess Yoasobi's Idol, became the number one song in the world. That's how huge Oshinoko was. So if it didn't get it purely from that thing alone, I was going to be pissed.
Agreed.
But yeah, so there's the anime awards that matter.
That matter. The rest of them can go fuck themselves.
Literally, because I cannot be bothered. No. Not really. I absolutely adore the anime awards. And I was really looking forward to us live streaming those and reacting to everything until I found out that they came out at 4 o'clock in the morning my time, 2 o'clock in the morning your time. And then as soon as I told you that, we were just like, no, yeah, fuck no.
No, thank you. Yeah, we yeah, already no, watch not, at not least one anime every week, plus all of the recording and shit that we do for this, plus life. So, yep. Yeah, no.
Yeah, especially here recently, because as Blue and I have had the conversation, I'm literally a full-time video editor at yeah. the moment.
Yeah.
My time is so scarce. I'm not going to lie. I watched season 2 of Vox Machina on like 2x speed because I've already seen it, because that's how little time I had to try to do everything I needed to do this week, because this week has sucked.
Yeah. Yeah, and... Yeah. Yeah.
But also, I will say none of that took away from this, because I have seen season 2 and we're going to have a conversation about it, because to those that have commented on the YouTube video for the first one, thank you. Mm-hmm. We really appreciate your yeah. feedback and the conversations that we've been having in the comment section. Because for one, it's probably our most engaged video that we've ever released up to this point. And it's, I knew the Critical Role fandom was, you know, really big on, like, you know, protecting their own turf. But just seeing the just outpouring of conversation in it has been phenomenal. So again, yeah. to those that have seen it, thank you very much. We really, really appreciate it.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's something that, like, I think we spoke about this before on the first episode of Vox Machina, but it's something that I'm newly exposed to. I don't watch Critical Role at all. So this is like Brad's realm that he's bringing me into. And there's a bunch of things that I want to get to with Vox Machina. And I don't have any of the background information because that's normally my job, but I don't.
It's all right. I do have the background information. And I also don't think this is on my anime list. So there's no background for you to have.
It's not anime, technically. It's just a cartoon. Yep.
So allow me to get the background animation on this, because that's what I'm good for. Actually, I'm not good for anything, let's be honest.
Most of the background information is the same, right, as the first season?
Yeah, everything is pretty much exactly the same. It's based on the campaign 1 from Critical Role, doubly named Vox Machina, mm-hmm. was created by Brandon Allman and Critical Role, so therefore Matthew Mercer and the rest of the cast of Critical Role that we will get into as we go along. The second season was 12 episodes. Season 3 has been announced, along with the first season of the Mighty Nein animated, which I am so fucking excited for whenever that decides to come out, because that is the Critical Role campaign that I have watched and I'm almost finished with. And dude, like, I know we've enjoyed this, but that second season or the second campaign is incredible.
Okay.
I love that second campaign so much. I have cried over that. Like, listening to people play D&D, I've cried over it. Aww. That's how so emotional that shit has gotten me. Aww. It's so good. So fucking good. And I have an idea of where they're going to end the first season, and I'm not ready to cry again.
No.
Oh, boy. But yeah, 12 episodes. It began airing in January of 2023. Aired its last episode on February 10th, because they drop these in 3-episode increments.
Right. Yeah, I watched it on Amazon. I don't know where else you can see it, but yeah.
It's on Amazon. I think Amazon has the exclusive license to it. Mm-hmm. So,
And yeah, it is based on a D&D campaign. I guess we'll just chuck on Spoiler Chicken Hats immediately.
Yeah, I got a button for that somewhere.
There you are.
I love the slip into the Irish accent. Big fan.
I don't even know if that was Irish. It was something.
It was pushing that realm.
But speaking of accents, that is something that I did want to speak of pretty quickly, because that was something that I went into pretty heavily within the first episode. Mm-hmm. And from the conversation that we had in the comments of that first episode on the YouTube channel, I do think my perspective has changed just a little bit, but I do still stand by my opinion within the first episode. So I said, and this is purely based off memory, we recorded that months ago, so if I say something wrong here, please bear in mind, I haven't listened back to it. It's been months. I think I said something along the lines of, if you're going to do a British accent, do a good one, because when you a British person hears it, they're going to be able to tell that you're not British. And it is frustrating. And that stems from British people, not just British people, Australians, people with accents, hearing consistently all the time accents that are done by American actors, usually American, sometimes others, but usually American actors who've been hired for roles, and they do an accent and they do it very badly. We're used to it at this point, but it is still something that we take note of. So it's not something that you're probably going to hear us ever like if you're somebody's like, ah, oh, you know, did you see that film or something? They're probably not going to bring it up, but it is something that we can hear, and it does break immersion for the film or series or whatever it is that you're doing. Also, accents are something that we speak about on the podcast in general quite often, because there are oftentimes within anime outside of, you know, Vox Machina, you often get foreign characters in anime. And one of the critique points that Brad and I have had for animes consistently is that they don't get foreign voice actors to do foreign characters in anime. So then when they speak English, they speak with a Japanese accent. And then when they speak Japanese fluently and completely with a, you know, their regional accent of wherever they are in Japan. And so it doesn't support the fact that they're a foreign character within the anime. So we're used to critiquing accents. Anyway, I say all of this because in the comments, somebody pointed out the fact that this is a fantasy realm. And so if the accent doesn't sound like a perfect mimicry of something on Earth, it doesn't have to. It's a fantasy realm. That makes sense. I will allow that. Like, that was a good point. So taking out the fact that they are trying to do a British accent and just saying they're doing a fantasy accent makes sense. Then my critique changes to the twins did not sound the same. They did not sound like they had the same regional accent, because one was a native speaker, one wasn't. So obviously there was a difference there. However, within this second season, they have clearly put a lot of work and practice into those accents because they were so much better. And the differences between the twins was purely like gender voice differences, or like the fact that they're two different humans. The accents were a lot more improved. I still stand by my point though, that in that first season, that accent broke my immersion of the show.
Which, I mean, I get that, especially if that's, you know, the mindset that you had going into it. And I think that's why you and I had very similar opinions going into the first season. But now, after listening through The Mighty Nein as much as I have, mad fucking props to everyone for doing what they did. Because Liam O'Brien, who does Vex, did a German accent all through The Mighty Nein, and it's incredible. Like, it is very, very well done. So the pure amount of work that they put into their craft is incredible. And then, of course, Laura Bailey doing Vaxalia.
She's improved leaps and bounds from the first season.
Yeah, and she just in general is a just incredibly talented voice actress. The entire cast of characters themselves are all just wonderful, wonderful voice actors, but especially seeing everything through the perspective of the Mighty Nein and seeing all of their characters kind of grow and where they take their characters through like arcs and how all of that changes and the pure amount of work that goes into it. I cannot say a bad thing about accents or voices. And if anything, the acting for this second season is better than what you got even through a lot of the campaign as well, because they've grown as artists. So therefore their craft is going to grow.
I agree.
Better as well.
Yeah. I think it's just that, like, I don't know. Like, I just find it funny that we choose to, I don't know if it's the voice actors consciously choosing it or audience members associating it, but I find it amusing that in general, when we are doing fantasy accents. We don't make one up necessarily. We just do a foreign accent that already exists. And I think that's where the door opens for criticism of a fantasy accent. Because if it's a true fantasy accent, then it doesn't matter what it sounds like, it's fantasy. But if it's a fantasy accent that is just someone's nationality, then you do open the door for criticism of it not sounding the same, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I think, bearing in mind that it's fantasy, it doesn't matter what anybody's accent sounds like, so long as there is consistency between the characters. Though, if you take out the fantasy element and they are doing specific nationalities as the basis for their accents, then they do open the door for criticism from native speakers of that accent.
Mm-hmm. I think, I guess my thought on it is, so long as they aren't doing it necessarily in like a way that's counterintuitive to the accent itself, then I'm definitely not going to judge it anymore.
No. Yeah. I mean, for me, it's all about the immersion. It's all about, do I think about the accent when I'm watching the character, or do I not? Does it not even cross my mind? Because if I'm thinking about the voice actor, if I'm thinking about the accent, if I'm thinking about that over the words they're saying, the emotions that are on screen, whatever the character is portraying, whatever the situation is happening, I'm no longer watching the show. I'm thinking about the show. And to me, that is the sign of a voice actor not doing the best job they could be doing in that circumstance, because I'm not listening to the character. I'm not with the character anymore. I'm outside of that. And so that's, yeah, that's kind of like my thing, is like, if that breaks, if I'm thinking about the voice, then it's, for me, not the right voice.
And I guess too, it's different with you being English. So that's, you know, your native realm of speaking, but also this is all you have to associate those characters with. True. So for you, there's not like this deep set in of, you know, that accent and that voice being that character, whereas people that actually listen through Vox Machina, those people already are those characters.
Yeah.
Yeah. So your association with it is only what little bit you've seen, whereas other people have spent hundreds of hours with these people, with that being their chosen accent for it. So I will purposefully play, you know, neutral on this and say I 100% see both arguments, because I 100% understand where you're coming from, and I, you know, can, you know, see what you're saying and will agree with what you're saying on some level of degree. But then on the other side of that, after having spent 400 plus hours with the same cast of characters with a, you know, different set of people, whenever I watch through Vox Machina now, I don't see the characters as, you know, what they are. I see them as Laura Bailey, Travis Willingham, and, you know, everyone else from the Mighty Nine, just because I'm so invested into their characters and I see their craft to the point where it's like, okay, I get it. And I can't be as harsh on it as I was in the first one, because I mean, you and I are both voice actors. We've been in the sphere, so I mean, we have a right to converse about it and critique in some way, especially with it being your natural accent. But at the same time, I just kind of look at it and I'm like, you know, props, because good job keeping that up for an entire thing. Whereas I don't know. I wish I knew where my brain was at for the first time we watched through this before I actually started listening to The Mighty Nein, because I don't know where my head was necessarily at with all of that. I could probably listen back to the episode and figure it out. I don't know, man. All I know is I had a great fucking time with the second season, especially with my knowledge of Critical Role and everything that I've listened to for the past year, because I spent pretty much the entirety of 2023 trying to get through The Mighty Nein. I've still got like 20 episodes left to get through, so I've still got fucking 60 plus hours of content to get through, but I have a lot more respect for the individuals involved and the amount of work and time that they put into their characters and to pick accents that really go with their characters, especially with the work that Liam put into Caleb with the German accent, or in the realm of Critical Role, Zimnian. So I have much more respect, and then therefore don't feel the need to critique on that anymore, so much as just, I guess, criticism for the show as a whole. Although knowing more about Vox Machina now, that's a whole conversation to have whenever we actually get into the anime itself.
Yeah, I mean, I will say that I do think the accents improved incredibly for this second season of Vox Machina. I did not find myself thinking about them consciously anywhere near as much as I did for the first season. And I do think the twins sounded like they were twins a lot more this season than they did the first season. So whether or not it was just them having to get used to it, you know, get used to being on the same page, get used to working with each other in this new format, because obviously they spent all that time playing the campaign, but then recording the voices for the actual, I want to say anime cartoon. That would be, it's a different medium. It would be different. Especially considering that, you know, like you said, they put so much work into it, so many hours of work, that having it be made into a cartoon would be terrifying in its own way, hoping that it does well. And it's also for a specific community. So I'm watching it from the outside of this community, but Vox Machina itself, their primary audience is people who've already watched the campaign or know of Critical Role, at least. So I am not their target audience as being outside of their viewing, general viewing platform. So this is like that critique that I had for the first season is coming from a the kind of opinion that would be created from someone who was just scrolling Amazon and found this show and decided to watch it. That's the opinion that I gave. Now, obviously, I know for a fair amount more. I still don't know a heck of a lot, but I know a bit more. And I just don't know that that the knowledge that I had from the first season and my thoughts and criticisms from the first season, I don't know that as a casual watcher, someone who didn't, because without you telling me, I wouldn't have known that it was associated with Critical Role as a D&D campaign. I would have just watched it as a cartoon. I don't know that I would have watched the second season, like, on my own. I think I don't think that I would have prioritized that over other anime.
Yeah.
But that being said, as a Critical Role fan, I can absolutely see how it doesn't matter what the voices sound like, because you've already, you know, fallen in love with those voices over hours and hours of content. And so watching that now, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter to you whatever they sound like.
Yeah.
But I having watched the second season, I think there has been incredible improvement with the voice actors. In general, but specifically, I think I am going to shout out the twins because they sound consistent now. And that is the key thing that I'm now looking for is, yeah, in a fantasy realm, do they sound like siblings? And I think they do.
And I wonder if that's because they were actually able to record together this go around. Whereas with the first season coming out in 2022, I wonder if it was still COVID restrictions. So only one person being able to record at a time. Whereas now they can actually be in a studio together and actually be able to play off of one another.
That makes sense. Yeah.
Again, I don't know if that's the case. That's just, again, my thoughts on it.
Mm-hmm. If that's what happened, that's a very explainable, solid theory. Mm-hmm. Anyway, we've rambled.
But that's just a theory.
Well, it's not a game theory anymore. Rip game theory.
He just uploaded his last theory yesterday at time of recording.
So sad. I mean, I'm not sad in the sense
so
that
many
he's
end
like,
of an eras.
I hope that he goes and has a wonderful life with his wife and child. But also, I'm so sad.
It's just there goes so much of my childhood twice.
I swear if
Markiplier retires, then I'm fucking done, man. I'm done with life.
Jax films, I'd die.
You know what, we have to be the new content creators for the new generation. I mean, hey, we're about to make Minecraft content. We're hip with the kids.
No, No, because that doesn't work. Minecraft is like a decade and a half old now. Like we bought it when it was like $5. Like, we can't do that.
Oh, God. I've been playing that bitch since it was in beta.
Yeah, we both have. That's the origin of my gamertag. Minecraft is the origin of my gamertag. That's how long I've been playing it.
Your gamertag, you say?
Yeah. Like, Blue was a nickname in high school, but Blue Lavender became a thing because of Minecraft.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
Very interesting. See, I just thought that was the whole, like, I thought all of that was the twins.
It was the twins. It was two separate twin occasions. It was...
Oh, okay. So I was correct. I just didn't know that Minecraft was involved. Like, I knew the twins were involved for all of it, but I didn't know
Okay. Blue came first. That was them, Melanie trying to tell me a story about her pet goldfish that she had named Blue. And then she kept getting my name and Blue confused. And obviously, we took the piss out of her for not being able to get a sentence out properly and started calling me Blue for the joke of it, and it stuck. Then a couple of weeks later, they were over at my house, literally here, upstairs at the kitchen table, and they were, we were setting up Minecraft accounts, and we must have been 15. Well, they were a year older, so they would have been 16. Yeah, so 15, 16. And I was trying to come up with a name for my Minecraft account, and we knew that Blue was going to be a part of it because we were still laughing about the goldfish joke. Yeah, and Blue Lavender became a thing. So
question.
Yeah.
With you handling, because I got to figure out how I'm going to ask this question, whether it's for comedic bit or not. So since you're handling the audio editing for the time being, whenever you edit these, do you listen to them the entire way through as you edit, or do you speed edit like I do and just cut out silences and shit?
I listen to all of it until I don't listen to all of it anymore, and then I speed edit the last 10 minutes.
Okay, because I speed edit literally the entire thing, just cut out silences, and I'm done with it. And with this being an hour and 15 minutes into the episode, I'm going to do this as a comedic bit rather than actually ask my question properly.
Okay.
So how do you get
beep
and Blue confused?
What?
How do you get your first name?
Okay, I'm with you.
And Blue confused.
I think it was...
How? How? I just put the bleep there to just bleep out your actual first. Yeah. How? How do you?
I think it was just that she got tongue-tied and she kept just saying Blue to get my attention or to tell me. And then once you do it once, and then both me and her sister started taking the piss, then that was it. You know, then it just happened over and over and over again. So I think it was just she purely stumbled on her words.
I mean, I get it because that's what I did to Brie. That's why she's Brittany. Oh,
she's cheese
now.
To me. She's so, cheese in
and it will. I think a lot of that has to do with the D&D campaign and us just naming both of y'all after cheese.
She's Brie. She's a cheese.
Yeah, that is true. But yeah, so I get that. But I was very confused as to how you get your first name and Blue just as brain.
I think it was just she just stumbled over her words. But anyway, like you said, we're an hour and fucking 20 minutes into this.
What's new, man? Whenever it comes to this, what about this is just new information? People show up to listen to us banter, and we're going to have people that show up to the video for this expecting us to be talking shit about Vox Machina so they can flame us in the comments section again. Because people are genuinely looking forward to this episode. This is the most looked forward to episode that we have ever put out of this podcast. And here we are.
Talking about dicks.
Bantering for the first hour.
We've already been talking about dicks.
There you go. I knew you had that cued.
I can play one kind of bite.
What have I said about playing those two sound bites together? Okay. They're two different, very different contexts. I play an instrument. Do not. That's not even me. People are going to start thinking that's me. That's not me. Ugh. Ugh. I've lost him, guys. We've lost him. He's off screen. He's not even on the webcam anymore. We've lost him. Give him a minute. He'll be back.
I'm fine. I'm fine. Everything's fine.
He's just crying. It's fine.
It's okay. Oh, I am fucking crying though.
Legit.
Oh, you love me, damn it.
Sometimes. And then... But when... Oh,
my face hurts.
So did mine. I don't even know what we're talking about. Vox Machina. The story was... I liked the story. So the story, this time for me, the main themes were basically just leveling up all of the individual characters to then set up the next season. It did have... We did have a boss fight at the end, but I think the primary substance of this season was leveling up everybody and giving them individual goals and moments more than, yeah, anything. But I actually really liked that. I found that some of the characters that didn't have a lot of depth in the first season gained a lot more depth. Some of them ended up feeling a little bit one-dimensional, or not necessarily one-dimensional, one-trick pony, two-dimensional. I don't know my dimensions. Don't worry about me. Like one-trick pony-esque, I guess. Like they had a very... Because the show has very specific styles of comedy, and those styles of comedies are associated with specific characters, within the first season, as somebody who is watching from an outside perspective, I did wonder if those jokes would end up becoming tired within the second season. I don't think they did, and I think it was a very delicate line that they had to toe on for that. Because, you know, like fart jokes, tit jokes, all that kind of stuff, they're funny, but they're funny up to a certain point. And then they become just dumb or breaking of the emotion of the moment. You know, they end up being cheap comedic relief because you don't know how to escape from a scene, if that makes sense. Like, you don't know how to progress forward, yeah. So you chuck in a cheap comedic joke. And that changes... Did your lights go out again?
No, I just changed them to blue.
Oh. I didn't notice that. It's just different.
I've been changing them for the past 5 minutes.
Well, it goes to show how much I pay attention.
Well, I get it. It's fine.
It's fine. I lost my train of thought. Yeah, so jokes, those kinds of jokes can end up becoming like an escape route for writers or whatever to exit out of a scene they don't know how to exit out of. And so they just chuck in a cheap joke. And that's what I was worried about happening, because those jokes were part of the first season, but they weren't used in that way within the first season. But I worried that they would then continue to be used that way for this season, because that's what I've seen happen over and over and over again. I don't think that happened. I think that they managed to, with the characters that they chose having the emotional development that they chose them to have, they allowed for those jokes to become detrimental to the character in an emotional way. Like, yeah, like that was very clever to call out that those jokes were stupid jokes and make it a personality trait of that character and a flaw of that character was very, very cleverly done as a way to not end up relying on those jokes in a story sense. I don't know if I articulated that well.
I get what you're saying. And I see... And now, having both watched Critical Role and been dungeon mastering for a while now, I see the dumb jokes as both something you do at the table, so therefore why wouldn't you adopt that? Similar to what we do here. Like, we do throw around a lot of fart jokes and boob jokes and all that other stuff because it's funny and it breaks up the monotony of what we're doing here, especially if we are far too serious for far too long, hence, you know, that little bit that we had earlier that just turned into chaos. But also using that as an opportunity to grow, because we've had this discussion on here plenty of times. What do we look for in the things that we watch? Like, we want character development and we want character growth. And in a good D&D campaign, again, at least in my opinion, you're going to have that character growth. Having Grog, you know, the character with 6 intelligence, figuring out where his strength comes from. Having Scanlan, who Sam Riegel plays to absolute perfection, learning, you know, or like finding himself learning to be serious and want to take care of his daughter and have a relationship with his daughter after everything that happened and the growth that came from that. Like, that's very real growth and moments out of those characters.
Yeah, I agree. And I like the way that the other characters reacted around them. I think that they did a very good job of having Scanlan recognize that the people around him were frustrated with him not having sincerity when they needed it, and him not knowing what to do with that. You know, him being like, I understand that that's what you need from me, but I don't know how to give that to you.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that was well done. One of the things that I don't think was well done with the show is the CGI.
Yeah. I mean, I get it, though.
Yeah, it's a small budget.
I can't shit on it too hard because the stuff that we normally cover are done by studios with bottomless pockets.
Agreed.
That choose to have shitty animation. Look at Tamayomi.
that's the worst animation we've ever seen. So it's not a high bar. But
yeah, and that's the thing. Like, seeing Tamayomi and then seeing this is the CGI.
It's not that bad. It's nowhere near that bad.
Yeah. So I can't shit on it, especially because it is a small team that's working on it. It's not, you know, something like MAPPA or Ufotable or anybody like that doing it. They are funding this kind of sort of out of their own pockets. The first season was funded entirely through crowdfunding and was funded within 24 hours.
That's incredible. Yeah.
Like, not only the first episode, but the entire first season was funded in 24 hours. I think it still holds a record for like the most funded Kickstarter of like within a period of all time.
Okay.
Like, it was absolutely incredible what they managed to do with it. But the fact that they are essentially like funding this themselves as a, you know, D&D podcast that, you know, they started just as a group of friends just sitting down to play D&D. It's incredible.
Yeah, I agree.
So
and I'm not saying that the show was worse off. Well, I mean, I kind of am, but like I understand that the CGI was the best that they could do with the cards that they were dealt. However, we are a review podcast. That's what we do. And in comparison to things like Demon Slayer that have still not had perfect CGI, but have perfected blending 2D animation into the CGI, this felt very contrasted in those scenes where you had, and there were parts of it that I think were art stylistic choices that I wasn't personally keen on. And I think the sword relic, it's not a relic, what is it? It's a vestige. Vestige. That's the word I was looking for, thank you. The sword vestige specifically was one of the moments that I saw that I was like, huh, that looks kind of funny. Because when it was drawn in 2D animation, it had a black outline. But when it was moved into CGI, it didn't. And so it just didn't sit right, and it looked like a different thing. And I mean, it didn't look like it was a chicken. Like, it was still obviously the same sword, but like
we went to two very different places there. So anyway, you carry on.
Okay, sure. Okay. Oh, geez.
You were definitely in the much better off realm there. But anyway, carry on.
Oh, boy. But I don't know. It was just one of those things that I noticed that I thought, I don't know why they made that decision to, I don't know enough about CGI to be like, oh, they had to do it that way. It just felt strange to me that it didn't look like that there was an inconsistency there. And some other moments with the art style I noticed, Percy specifically with his eyebrow sometimes they didn't fill in his eyebrow where his glasses cut off. So it was like they auto-filled in the drawing, and it auto-filled in the part of his eyebrow that's inside the glasses frame. But then on the outside of the glasses frame, it was still just the outline of his eyebrow. And so it's tiny, tiny things like that that I notice, because that's what I do. I'm an art student. I don't always do digital art. I'm more of a physical art student, but that is what I notice that I saw and thought could be improved upon. But like you said, this is a small budget, small team show. I think that it's important to remember that when you're going into these critiques, but I do also, this is a critique. I'm not going to say, oh my God, everything was amazing, and take into account the budget, because we've reviewed plenty of animes that are the first anime a studio's ever created. We reviewed one only the other day that was the first full anime that studio had ever created. I think that was Zom 100, was it not?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, and that's up for anime awards this year. I understand that they're actually probably, I think they're a subsidiary studio of a different studio, so they're not exactly lacking on funding, but it's still, the first product that they've fully come out with. So I do have to hold it to that same standard. And I just don't think that the animation and the CGI held up to that standard. However, I do think that the storyline, the character development, and the intricacies of Vox Machina Season 2 did hold up with some of the animes that we have seen this year. And I think that it has vastly improved upon the first season from an external perspective of not having seen anything to do with Critical Role.
Yeah.
But yeah, I can't sit here and be like the CGI was good, because it wasn't.
Oh, no. I fully understand where you're coming from, and I apologize if I'm coming off as combative.
No, you're not.
In this, because I don't want to feel like I'm just playing devil's advocate time here.
There's two people here for contrasting opinions. That's the point.
Yeah. But it's just one of those things where I feel like I just have a new appreciation for it, and I don't have, the CR rose-colored glasses of everything they do is perfect, because it's not. Mm. The CGI does, it is jarring at times. But I've seen other things that do it just as poorly that I still really enjoy. Take Overlord, for instance. Mm-hmm. It's 2D stuff. It does incredibly well. But the moment you put a dragon or some big bitch on screen and it's CGI in a fully 2D world, it's really fucking weird. Mm-hmm. It is incredibly strange. And I adore Overlord to no end. But it's still very jarring to see shit like that happen. Mm-hmm. So again, I'm not sitting here trying to, like I said, play devil's advocate or try to take up for it in any way. I'm just here to be sassy.
No, I appreciate the secondary perspective, because I don't have the same emotional attachment to the show that you do, and obviously the fans of Critical Role do. And so I don't know. It's important to keep in mind that people have a real emotional investment in the shows, because I do for anime. There are shows that I've read the manga of, 10 years ago, and finally they're getting an anime adaptation and I'm freaking shitting myself about it. I don't care what they do. It's going to be amazing, And I think that is important to remember. But yeah, I do also have to just be honest. And I think that there were errors in the animation that budget was not the issue for. Specifically, Percy's glasses is the one thing that's coming to mind right now. It's his eyebrow and the glasses. That had they been more attentive, or maybe had another pair of eyes look it over or whatever. And again, I mean, maybe that's a budget issue, because if they can only afford one animator that's overworked, then they can only afford one overworked animator. But, I think that's a fair criticism.
And I think there might be smaller details, like the Percival thing that I didn't notice, because I watch it on this. I watch it on my phone. Mm-hmm. So there could be a lot of smaller details that I don't see because I'm watching it on a smaller 4K screen rather than watching it on a laptop or my computer monitors or anything like that. So,
yeah, I also did notice a color shift with, and this may be my computer screen because I'm watching it on my laptop, and my laptop is struggling because it is my only laptop type computer device right now, and it's about 8 years old and it's trying its best. So this could purely be a me tech issue. But on Vex, I think the male twin, I'm trying to remember off of my head rather than...
No, I think I got it wrong earlier. Vex is the girl and Vax is...
That's what I thought.
The now, guy, okay. Because it's Vexalia and Vaxeldam.
Yeah, that's what I thought as well.
So okay. I fucked that up earlier, so that's my bad.
Okay. When he dove into the blood pool and then came out and then left the thing, the... I don't really know what you call it, the temple thing... His coloring looked gray. I thought at first that's a really cool stylistic choice. I thought it was a conscious choice. But then I noticed that everyone from the scenes thereafter for a little while, their coloring looked off to me. And I don't know if that was a stylistic choice or if that was my laptop or if it was just that they put a filter over it or something, because it wasn't just him. I would have, this is now where my selfish brain is like, I think it would have been really cool that when he became the champion of the Raven Lady, if his skin did shift a little bit more gray palatable. But again, I don't, that purely could have just been my computer, but I did notice that and it just made me curious. And then I was like, oh, actually, if that is a conscious choice, that's a really sick conscious choice, because him effectively becoming a Reaper, which I feel like is what basically happened, is if they made him like a little bit gray, a little bit ash toned compared to his twin, that would have been really cool. I don't know, but yeah.
I agree. That would definitely be a nice little like symbolic choice type thing. Would be interesting.
Yeah, but like I said, I don't know if that's actually what happened or if my computer screen decided to take a break for a bit.
It is possible.
Yeah.
My phone screen likes to take a break every now and then. I'm just like, why?
Yeah.
Stop your shit. I have important things to do.
The difference between the color on my drawing tablet and on my laptop is so astronomical that I sometimes have to like check myself to be like, oh my God, like what is, did I choose the right color? Like what the heck am I doing?
Oh, it's great.
Yeah. And I can't even like ask my brother, who's the tech genius in the family, to help me out because he's colorblind. So... Hey, brother, help me with my computers. No, sorry, can't do that. I can turn it into colorblind mode for you, but then you can't see shit.
I mean, I can technically help you with both. It's just I live really far away.
You live in a foreign America land.
Yeah, freedom.
Freedom. Speaking of which, I saw one of your eagles up here.
Nice.
Yeah, the other day. I was like, hey, that's an American eagle, except it's not because there's a higher population of bald eagles in Canada.
Yeah, that's my least favorite department store. Hooray.
Hooray.
Sorry, I saw an American eagle opportunity.
Is that technically a department store? Is it just a clothing
store? It's not a department store. It's a clothing store? Yeah,
departo.
But I don't know. I guess I consider like a mall a giant fucking department store because there are so many different stores that consist of different departments and shit. So that's why I was just like, yeah, department store. It's not. Walmart is a fucking department store.
Walmart is a mess.
Walmart is a fucking mess.
Do they really sell guns in Walmart in America?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
You know what? Whenever you come in later this year, I'm taking you to Walmart.
Oh, jeez. Oh, geez.
You get to see an American Walmart.
I'll have to take you to a Canadian Walmart and you can see the difference because...
Two things I'm taking you to while you're here. I'm taking you to a Walmart and I'm taking you to a Bucky's.
Oh, okay. Okay.
You get to go meet the beaver.
Beavers are our thing. You have eagles. We get the beavers.
You, mate, you haven't lived till you've been to a Bucky's.
Okay. Okay. To know.
I say as an American, that's just like, God, Bucky's is a fucking cult. Let's just put it that way.
Target
now,
well.
Granted, we do have Target.
Target did not live here. It lasted maybe 2 years.
They tried. I was going to say, did they try to expand into Canada and then it shut down?
They did, but they just, I don't think they understood what Canada is. And I think they tried to just do what America does in Canada and neglected Canada. So I think that's what happened. I think they tried to just open the exact same stores, but then they didn't consider the fact that they would be then importing their goods and that we don't manufacture a lot of the same things here. And so a lot of their shelves were very empty for like the entire time that they were here. And they didn't stock them with other things that Canadians would buy. So they just tried to like fill it with American stock, realize that they can't fill up half of the store because they can't support 50% of that stock. And so they just left 50% of the store empty. And it was like, okay, fine, I guess. Didn't work. And they lasted maybe 2 years.
Nah, you know what it is? Canada doesn't have as many basic white bitches as we do here.
Canada doesn't have as many anything as you do there. Canada's population is a tenth of yours.
I mean, true, true, very true. But no, if you ever go into a standard American Target, it is all basic white bitches. You want to know how you know that?
How?
They put a Starbucks in every Target.
Fair enough. They had a Starbucks in Chapters, which is a bookstore here, but Chapters has now sold to Indigo, which is a bigger book chain. And now I don't know. I think that they don't have Starbucks in them anymore.
Well, I mean, I know Barnes and Nobles all have Starbucks in them too, or most of them do. No, I think every Barnes & Nobles I've ever been into has had a Starbucks.
So they may have...
in it, now that I think about
if
it.
If they're launching Barnes & Nobles in Canada, then Starbucks may have jumped ship from Indigo. And then they may fill it with Second Cup, which is a Canadian company.
Tim Hortons.
Timmy's is no longer a Canadian company. It got bought out by Burger King, and McDonald's bought the recipe. So McDonald's coffee is now Tim's coffee, and Burger King put in a new coffee and now owns Tim's.
So you're telling me that... my whole excursion that I wanted to make while I was in Calgary is now null and void.
Well, I mean, you can go to Tim's, but it's not Tim's. You should go to Mickey's. Mickey's? McDonald's. You should go there if you want Tim's coffee, because they have Tim's coffee.
Do they have one in the Calgary airport?
I should think so. It's McDonald's.
Okay. Just trying to make sure.
There's one in Antarctica. Like, it's McDonald's. They're everywhere.
Yeah, because I'm not going to have as much time in Canada for the Japan layovers as I initially thought. Because I know whenever we were first planning the trip, it's like, yeah, I'm going to be in Calgary for like 19 hours. And now it's like, nope, you get three there the first time and an hour the second one.
Yeah. Yeah, you get enough time to move to your next departure lounge.
Yeah, which I don't have to touch my baggage on layovers, right? They handle that shit?
Yeah, just your
carry-on?
Carry-on, yeah.
Do not let me forget my carry-on.
No, I won't.
I trust you. I can't trust myself. I trust you.
Well, if you take like a backpack or something, then it'll fit in the seat underneath in front of you.
Oh, that's right. We actually have seats in front of us. We got wing seats. I forgot.
Yeah, I don't think we're on an exit line. I think we're just on a leg room line. Cause this dude, fucking 7'12".
And you're 4'2".
Yeah, that's true. I'm 4'2". That's canon now.
That's been canon for this whole friendship.
It has been. But people literally just watching this episode because it's a Vox Machina episode are going to go away thinking that I'm 4'2". I'm actually 3'4".
Oh, well, you heard it here, folks. She is actually shorter than I thought.
I am not. I am well above average height. I am also a giant.
You know what? I'm going to make sure that every photo we take together, whether it's your trip here, my trip there, or the trip to Canada, I will fucking make sure that the angle makes you look as short as humanly possible.
Every single one is on a staircase, and I'm always 2 steps down.
I just always carry around a stack of books so I could just step
up. Yeah, you got an extendable ladder that you just attach to your back and then just like whip out.
Oh, that's great.
Anyway,
I'm so pleased.
Vox Machina.
Yeah, Vox. Vox Machina. Which, I mean, at this point, we've discussed it enough. So, brief overview. The Chroma Conclave, which is a group of dragons, shows up, wreaks havoc. And our group of heroes have to go off, level up, get shit together, grow as individuals, and only manage to kill one dragon. But then another one turns.
Yes.
They become friends, allies, maybe. Who knows? All happened in the last episode, so who fucking knows where it's going to go? Unless you've seen the Vox Machina campaign, then you know, and I swear to God, if you give any spoilers, you get to go to the Cactus Corner, you you're a prick and you get to go meet the most adorable prick.
Yeah, if you want to do spoilers in the comments of the YouTube video, please tab down a whole bunch so that people can expand the message and put like spoiler warning in your initial part of your comment. Because like, don't be a dick.
Yeah, don't be a dick. If you're a dick, you get to meet the prick.
Which is hilarious.
That should be a t-shirt. Oh my god, that should be a t-shirt. It's just the happy prickle, and it's just in fancy cursive. Be a dick, meet the prick.
Yeah. But
oh my god, that's perfect.
Some key points of the storyline that I thought were also really good. When now I'm gonna get them confused again. Vexalia, yes, Vex dies. Speaking of spoilers, we've had the chicken hats on ages ago. You can't yell at me.
Yeah, the chicken hats have been on for like an hour at this point.
When she dies, that was really good. I do have a slight wish for Percy to have been more distraught, but that's because I'm satanic and wish for people to feel awful things whenever. Like, this is a consistent criticism I've had across a lot of different animes as well, is that I often find that characters don't linger in emotion enough for me. I love for them to fully sit in emotions and process it and grieve and to draw that out, and the guilt to eat at them, and for them to like vomit up their own death. Like, that's just a personal preference of mine. So I'm aware that that's not how most productions go in general, let alone most animes, or in this case cartoons. And so I know that that's a me thing, but I do wish that Percy had been more distraught. I can understand not in the moment, because in the moment you're in fix mode and processing mode. So I can understand in the moment not being like heavily emotive, but after the fact, and when he was apologizing to Vax, I would have loved to have had a moment for him where he fucking loses his shit. That would have been nice. He did kind of have a moment where he was like, well, that could, like, but it wasn't enough for me to satisfy my murderous rampage of wanting everyone to feel everything at 112% every day. You know? What about you?
Yeah. I guess you know what? I can't really speak on this because I know stuff that happens later on in the campaign. Mm-hmm. So I can't make a unbiased opinion on this statement, because I'm not going to spoil anything for you.
Fair enough.
So I will abstain from commenting on that.
I'm trying to think of like the big mood shifting moments. Oh, Grog with his uncle being a dickwad and then making up friends with his cousin again. That was cute.
Yep. That was an enjoyable
bit. I liked that
bit. Grog in general.
Skinny Grog was hilarious. Did appreciate that.
It was hilarious.
Also, when he gets his beard, that 12 out of 10.
Grog is the best. Yeah.
That scene of like, so what does it even do? Poof, beard. It gives me a beard. That's all it does. It gave me a beard. Like, that, fucking love that. Because that's exactly how I would react. I've spoken many times here on this podcast about how I wish I could grow a beard, because that's hilarious. Comedy gold. I want one. Why can I not grow a beard? That's sexist. Mine? It's sexist that I can't grow a beard.
I'll give you mine if you'd like it. Dear.
I will take it. My brother's got one. You got one. It's fucking mean. My dad has one. It's not fair that I can't grow a beard. Like, this is mean.
Oh.
Okay. Side note, but my brother and my dad are both taller than me, but I have, like, my proportions are all leg. And it's funny, like, my brother and I will compare, like, belly button heights, and, like, my belly button's, like, an inch higher than his, despite the fact that he's got, like, 4 inches on me, because he's mostly torso and I'm mostly leg. And so we end up, like, our proportions are strange. They're not strange. We're both normal humans. But, like, he's, like, a 32 length pant, and I'm a 34 length pant. But he still always goes, I need the leg room. And I'm like, fuck you, dude. And he's like, I'm taller than you. And I'm like, I have more leg than you do. Like, this is mean. So whenever we're in, the car with the whole family, like, it was my dad's birthday this past weekend, so we went out to lunch with the four of us, and we all piled in the same car. And obviously kids go in the back, regardless of how old you get. And still my brother's like, I should sit behind mom because I need the leg room. I'm like, fuck you, dude. No, you do not need the leg room. Ugh, but still, he...
Also, yeah. Holy shit, you've got longer legs than I do.
Yeah, see, I'm like all leg. I don't know why I'm all leg, but I'm leg.
So, wait, how the fuck are you 4'2" and yet you wear... Uh-huh. You got 34-inch legs? Uh-huh. Your proportions are just like, what?
I'm just neck, neck, head, and leg. No, like, I have to wear extra long ladies' pants because ladies' pants... are standard sizes like a 30 or 32 length, and they don't mm-hmm. do standard size lengths for everybody, like for all pants. It's they just sell pants in one size length because women are all the same height anyway. So I have to get like extra long or like long pants, trousers, jeans, whatever, and but my like shorts, tops. Top half things are all regular length. I am normal, regular length. Top half, pants, I have to get long.
So mainly what I'm hearing is that we're not really going to be able to close shop while we're in Japan.
No,
neither of
I
us.
May be able to get some like hoodies, t-shirts, but that's about where it ends. If I tried to get a skirt, I would be illegal.
Yeah, you can't get... You could actually get some stuff. I can't get shit while I'm there. I'm 6'4", and I was trying to think of a term that's not derogatory, but I am big.
You're just grog.
There is nothing there.
Well, I mean.
Oh, shit. I can't do it. I did it the other night for D&D. Oh. Because I actually put grog in the campaign.
That's funny.
Because I was trying to think of a... Like, I had one of my players fighting a Goliath in the Colosseum, and I'm like, what's a good name for a Goliath? Oh, Strong Jaw. That's cool. Then I was like, Strong Jaw. And I was doing all of this, like, improving as we were going. So there's no changing things and going back since we actually recorded the session. Mm-hmm. So I can't just take shit back. I'm like, Strong Jaw. Wait, that's Grog. Ah, great. Now I just got to be Grog the whole time. Which was great. I had a blast playing Grog and like trying to do Travis Willingham's voice for it. Mm-hmm. It was great. I did not in any way use the first name Grog. I just stuck with Strong Jaw. Only two people at the table got it, so it's great. Oh, but it was so much fun. Yeah. It was shenanigans. But yeah, we've
rambled. I don't think
unless
I
you've got more
to
points
say,
to go over. All right. So, what do you give it?
I have no idea what I gave the first season. I have to dock off a point for the animation, for animation inconsistencies and for the CGI not being top-notch. I feel like that should be 2 points because they feel like two different aspects to me. I think...
We didn't rate it.
I can see that. Okay, fair. we're rating it now. I'm sitting at a... 7 feels good. 7 feels comfortable to me out of 10.
I was going to say, I'm at like a 7.5.
Yeah.
That's kind of where I'm at with it.
Yeah, like it's good. I definitely enjoyed my time while watching it. I think it improved on the last season. I think the voice acting improved. I think the storylines developed more in a way that I found to be very like palatable as someone who hasn't seen the campaign. And I think that the emotional development and character development was very good. I think that there were some... unpredictable aspects that happen. Obviously, some of it's unpredictable because it's based on a D&D campaign, but I also think that they did a very good job of not letting that dictate the show. Like, it's still they did a good job this season of making it a piece of entertainment outside of the D&D campaign. It was much better at being its own thing, its own entity, as opposed to being something for the fans of the D&D campaign. And I think that makes me look forward to them producing their next campaign because they're going to be starting on that level of learning. And so hopefully the entire show that is being made is going to be a completely consumable, palatable show in its own right, not just specifically for the fans of the campaign. And I think that's what they're going for. I think they want it to reach a wider audience and a different audience than the campaign. So I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, it's one of those things to where the Mighty Nein is on a general consensus, the best campaign that Critical Role has done. Mm. It did the most numbers for them. The characters are the most universally beloved. There's so much about the Mighty Nein that everybody just absolutely enjoys. So it'll be like, I'm incredibly excited to see the Mighty Nein get animated because I'm invested in the story. I'm invested in the characters. And like I said, there have been bits where I've just cried because it's been that emotional and that great. Mm. It's so much fun that I cannot wait to see it. But yeah, I enjoyed Vox Machina. I'm excited for season 3 because I'm excited to get into the more, I guess, in-depth bits of the campaign because I know how it ends. I've seen the end of the campaign and I've seen like the big emotional moments throughout it as well. So I'm excited to see more and to see how it ends. But like I said, much, much more excited for the Mighty Nein whenever it comes around.
Yeah.
Much, much more invested.
Yeah. So we will definitely be reviewing those whenever they come out. And we do look forward to hearing your opinions in the comment section. I understand that a lot of you guys are very emotionally invested in the show, and I have nothing against that. Like I said, I am for anime. Yeah, so I'm looking forward to hearing your opinions, and if they differ from mine or from Brad's, then that's cool. I want to hear them. Like, I'm not I want to hear them because I don't know everything about this show. And I've said it before and I'll say it again, we do not have any qualifications in reviewing. We are just two idiots that review shit. So we have qualifications in voice acting and in art, but we don't have qualifications in reviewing. So there you go. Please be gentle. Yeah, we have soft feelings.
Yeah, we are nothing more than two idiots with microphones that for some reason y'all listen to and could not be more grateful for having done this for the past 4 years now. Because it's like we said, at time of recording, it's our 4-year anniversary of the podcast. And I am so pleased with how everything has went and so pleased with how everything is going. Speaking of where everything is going, next week we've got the Anime Island episode.
Yes.
With Melissa White. So do pretty, pretty please check that out. Again, it was a phenomenal interview. Melissa was an amazing guest. I could not be more thankful to have had her on the podcast. And then after that, we have what I have told Blue is my favorite romance of all time now with A Sign of Affection, because I'm changing the schedule because with the introduction of Anime Island, by the time we get around to recording our next episode for the podcast, it'll be time for that.
Which is super exciting.
I'm so very excited. And with that also means we technically have 2 weeks off to actually focus on other projects and get shit caught up and closer to where we want to be, especially with you getting your new PC in a couple of days.
I never told the story of the PC. That'll have to wait for a bonus YouTube video because
that really can be something we record tomorrow. Yeah. And put up on the YouTube channel is
the story of
We wait till you actually get the PC and then we can talk about the chronicles of the PC.
The PC chronicles. Just such a random coincidence. That was like fate for that to have happened on that day. And you're not going to know what that is literally. Unless you watch the YouTube video. So fuck you.
No, please. We love you. Stay.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean it. Go watch the video.
But yeah. Thank you all so much for listening. Blue and I greatly appreciate it. Again, next week, Melissa White. So excited. And then after that, back to our regularly scheduled programming. But until then, we'll catch you all next time. Bye-bye. Bye.